Current state on 90.5 WKAR. Throughout the year, MSU's Residential College in the Arts and Humanities brings in speakers and artists from around the country for their Wednesday Night Live series. This week they welcomed filmmaker Eric Prue. His films include Lemonade and Lemonade Detroit. His latest film, 365 Days, A Year in Happy Valley, re-examines the Penn State scandal and looks at how the community is coping in the aftermath. Current State's Emmanuel Berry sat down with Prue, and she joins us now. Emmanuel, tell us why he pursued such drastically different stories.
Well, he explains that they are drastically different, but at the same time and at their core, they're similar in the sense that they're about communities that are in transition. And just to note for this interview and for our listeners, this discussion about 365 Days does cover the sensitive topics of the Penn State scandal. But before we talked about his latest film, Eric briefly spoke to me about Lemonade Detroit. Eric's introduction to Detroit was actually, he was screening his first film, Lemonade, which looks at how people, Eric included, reinvented their careers and their lives after being let go. So while screening this to a bunch of laid-off Detroit advertisers, Eric was not really expecting a warm reception. But at the end of the film,
they clapped, first of all.
No tomatoes.
Yeah, no tomatoes. And then the discussion after the film were all these, this incredible vibrancy of ideas and what they could do with their, you know, their blank slate now, and how, you know, the topic turned into Detroit's blank slate, not just sort of individual people, but the city as a whole, and you know that optimism threw me a little bit. I wasn't really sure, and I thought, you know, the more I asked around and the more people I talked to in Detroit, native Detroiters, I realized there was something in the water there. Mm-hmm. You know, that there is this just incredible resiliency and the ability to you know, you just keep knocking me down, but I'm just going to keep coming back and bigger and better and stronger. And I just thought, you know, for a couple of reasons. I mean, just the topic in and of itself, I thought deserved a film to be made about it. But also my own sort of penance for feeling the way I felt about Detroit. I mean, it was my first time in the city, and having come back, having visited there for the first time with all of these impressions of the city that were forged in me by years and years of watching the news about Detroit, were everything that I believed about Detroit was formed by my impression in the media, that the media fed to me. The media did not feed to me any of the incredible stories of resilience and hope and reinvention there. Mm-hmm. And I just thought I needed to do something to make up for my own opinion, you know, to kind of give back, because I had felt guilty a little bit for being so easily duped.
So the short version of that film, Lemonade Detroit, has been released. What are the future plans for that film and that project?
Sure. So, you know, the short film, which right before he died, Roger Ebert actually called gobsmacking. Like, I had to throw that plug in there because, you know.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, Roger Ebert liked the film. So, but the 17-minute short film is done. For the last, you know, we finished that a couple of years ago, actually, and I have been sort of plugging away at trying to get the longer version done. We've done a bunch more filming since the film was released, and I've been trying really hard to figure out, you know, where does the funding come from? How can I get back in the city to do more filming? What are the new stories? And have accomplished a lot toward that. But the more I think about it, the more I would love to do and we are doing a series of shorts. So coming back every year or so, year to 18 months, and taking another snapshot of the city, because, you know, this was a snapshot of the city in 2011, you know, Lemonade Detroit. The next series could be, you know, lots changed. The city's filed for bankruptcy. There's a new mayor. There's already a new chapter, and it's just a couple of years later, you know. And I would love to, we're going to keep doing that for the next, you know, the foreseeable future.
Your latest film that you're working on focuses on another city that's in a transition of sorts. It's called 365 Days, A Year in Happy Valley. What similarities do you see between this newest work and Lemonade Detroit in the sense of them being in transition in these kind of challenging moments?
You can't get more different than, you know, this rural agriculture farming town that happens to have a college in it, 50,000 students, and Detroit. You know, I mean, you really, they're pretty as different as America gets. You know, the one real striking similarity to me, though, is that they both had their foundation and their identity sort of rocked. You know, in Detroit, so much of the identity in Detroit is based on the automobile industry, and we're a car town, and we make cars, and the middle class began in Detroit. You know, and when that industry goes away or is nearly decimated, the identity of the town suffered as well. I think you can say something pretty similar to State College in Happy Valley, in that so much of that town's identity was wrapped in football and Joe Paterno, and when the scandal of you know, Jerry Sandusky and pedophilia sort of became the story, the identity of, well, who are we then? At least from the outside looking in, not necessarily from the inside. I think the identity of people in State College is pretty well grounded. But from the outside looking in, it's, you know, you're not Joe Paterno anymore. What are you? You know, and you know, they're defined now. You know, their internal definition, how they define themselves internally, I think is still sort of reforming. But to the outsider looking in, it's like now they're the pedophilia college. And you know, this film is, and honestly, like my penance, in Detroit, my reasons for wanting to work on this film about Penn State are the same. I mean, once you go there, you realize, okay, this isn't what the media portrayed.
I mean, what was your initial reaction? Your partner on this film was Eric Porterfield. What was your reaction when he said, "I want to make a movie about the aftermath of the Penn State scandal"?
I think my exact quote was, "Go to hell." You know, I think I said no. I mean, really what I said was, Eric, you know, I'm not your man. I'm not your man because I am so personally jaded by this. You know, I have two small kids. I am actually an adult survivor of child abuse myself. So when I heard all this stuff happening, I was like, you know what? You got to find somebody else. You know, I can't do this with you. And he just kind of kept gently and tactfully feeding me little clips about why everything that I was hearing in, you know, in ESPN and Piers Morgan and all the others may not have been the whole truth.
You mentioned this a little bit, but outside of Happy Valley, the narrative of the Sandusky scandal seems to be, it's set, like, we don't think about it so much anymore in the sense. And we've already told the story. How is that narrative different in Happy Valley?
Well, I'd ask you. I mean, what do you think the story is? You know, the story to come out of the news and the general impression left by, you know, left in the wake of that. I mean, do you have a
I think in a general sense that there's a lot of blame on Paterno, and that a lot of people still harbor a lot of anger or feel that he's responsible in a lot of ways for this.
Well, I think that's exactly why I ended up wanting to make the film. I mean, I went into the project with those exact emotions, with those exact thoughts. But then when you realize that, you know, Joe Paterno was to this day the only person to have done anything. He reported it to his superiors. He reported it to the head of campus police. He was the only person to wave his hands and say, something's happening here, guys. And then when you sort of piece that together with he was like he graduated 90% of his athletes, you know, and the NCAA average is only something like 67%. There was no achievement gap between his black and white athletes. You know, they all performed well. You know, he said, if you're not going to go to class, you're not going to play. You know, he had his character was something to be admired, and he said himself before he died that, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I wish I had done more. And most the media portrayed that as an admission of guilt, when really, if you take it at face value, it is more the only person who said, I feel like I want to take some responsibility for this. And I just looked at that as something to be admired, and not like, aha, I knew you were guilty. You know, we talked to one of his former players, and he said, you know, rather than say, aha, I knew it. I knew you knew something. You are guilty. He looked at it as like, you know what, maybe that should be the example of, maybe we all should have done more. Maybe we all should have had our eyes a little more open. Maybe we all should have, you know, been a little bit more cautious, because maybe we could have prevented some of this from happening.
You spent a year essentially in this community. How did it change in that year?
Well, there was a lot of, and there is to this day too, but when we first got there, all the emotions were so raw. You know, the media had just come in and just pounded the student body and the locals. And there's a lot of general distrust and infighting, and people are angry at the board of directors, the board of trustees. The board of trustees was sort of, you know, holed up and not taking any questions, and they're kind of protecting their own interests. And you know, this debate between we need to move on and put this in our rearview mirror versus no, we need to get to the bottom of it, and who knew what when, and who from the board of trustees needs to be fired, and you know, what changes do we need to make around here to make it safer? I mean, there's just a lot of a battle, and you know, Penn State, you know, I think to many Penn Staters, like, we, you know, this ain't broken. You know, one man fooled us all, and we don't need the culture here was just fine. You know, versus people who say, oh, you have a culture problem to allow this to happen. You know, then there's still that debate, and it was very raw. I would say in the last year to 18 months, there's been a lot of calming. I don't want to say that things are healed or better, but things are healing and getting better. And people are starting to have a much more gentle discourse. You know, I mean, people are really, you know, understanding each other a little better, and maybe it doesn't have to be, you know, this is the film, the position the film takes. Maybe it doesn't have to be, you know, you're right and I'm wrong. Maybe we can both have our opinions, and we can allow for them both, and just have some calming soup and talk about it.
Eric Brew is the creator of Lemonade and Lemonade Detroit. His latest project, 365 Days, A Year in Happy Valley, examines the aftermath of the Jerry Sandusky scandal at Penn State. Eric, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.